we go.
Hello, everyone. My name is Carolyn Sinkinson, and I'd like to thank you for attending today's session. And I'd also like to welcome the online audience who is joining us from the United States and a number of other countries as well. With that in mind, just a few reminders. The session is being streamed and recorded. So during the session, if you do want to ask questions, please use the microphones in the room so that both the speakers and those participants online can hear you. And those of you online, if you'd use the chat pod in your webcast window. And then finally, I'd like to encourage each of you to complete an online evaluation form for the agenda for this session. The link is available in the online agenda to that evaluation form. And without any further ado, I'll hand it over to Regina Kunkel.
Hello, everybody. Thank you so much for attending our session. We're very excited to have you here. As you know, the topic is women in technology and strategies and best practices to attract young women into IT programs and careers, something that we're all very passionate about, and we're going to share our thoughts with you on that. So with me, I have a distinguished set of panelists that we're going to introduce and give. Each panelist is going to give a little bit of their background. I have Susan Workman from Indiana University, Sharon Pitt from George Mason University, Margaret Burnett from Oregon State University, and myself from NetApp. With that, I'll turn it over to Susan, if you want to go ahead and tell us a little bit about you.
Thanks, Regina. I am Sue Workman, and I'm an Associate Vice President for Client Services and Support at Indiana University. I've been at IU for about 22 years now.
Okay.
Can you turn my mic up?
Is it better if I just hold it?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll do that. So I've been at Indiana University for about 22 years now and worked in private industry before that, so that means I'm really old. I have been just thrilled with the job that I have. I love that job and have been able to really, I think, use my strengths in order to be able to do the things that I want to do, both in life and in a career. So it's just been a great place, and I encourage all the young women out there to try to find their place and where they fit in their careers.
So with that, Sharon?
I am Sharon Pitt. I'm Executive Director of the Division of Instructional Technology at George Mason University. There are lots of information on the slide, some of which will seem a little odd, but I think the piece that I would add is just follow your passions and use your strengths. And this is what we're trying to encourage students and even younger students in the George Mason community to do as they look at entering into the technology field.
And Margaret?
Hi, I'm Margaret Burnett from Oregon State University. And I'm also on the leadership team for the National Center for Women in Technology, and I'm kind of wearing both hats here. I love my job too, and I won't go into all the details here, but I do want to focus on three recommendations. We all did recommendations, but this was my favorite part. So my first one is for you. So if you're one of the people who suffers from underconfidence, which is kind of endemic to females in technology, but some males suffer from it too, then just ask yourself whether that underconfidence is working for you. So if it makes you work harder or try harder at something you really want, then maybe that's working for you. But if it makes you opt out of opportunities just because you're afraid that you might not be able to do them well, then that's working against you. So just kind of reflect on that. And then something for someone else. Probably most of you work with younger people, especially a lot of us work with students. And so try doing something tiny. A little example on this slide is I worked with a high school intern all summer, and so did my students, and a good summer. But the thing she said stood out for me, for her, was just one sentence. I told her that if she wanted to major in computer science when she went to college, I would be absolutely thrilled to work with her. And that's the thing that made her think seriously about majoring in computer science. Before, she really hadn't been thinking about it. How long did it take me to do that? How much work? One sentence? It took nothing. But something like that can change someone's life. And then the third thing is, if someone helps you in some small way or big way, then pass it on.
Thank you. We did want to acknowledge that the ACM, Association for Computer Machinery, is sponsoring one of our speakers here today. So thank you very much with the Distinguished Speakers Program. So, and then there's me. So my name is Regina Kunkel, and I work at NetApp. NetApp is a manufacturer of storage technology. And so one of the things that I like to do is I'm very passionate about getting women and young girls more excited about technology and technology jobs. And I do travel around the country, and I do talk to a number of schools and students about the wonderful career field. One of the things that I'm really passionate about is telling, especially, and I want everybody in this room to take this one too, is that how many times have you heard a woman say or a girl say, "I'm not technical," and that drives me crazy. That's self-depreciating, right? It puts ourselves down, and yet you know, every single girl you know is 10 times more technical than all of us. I mean, you see them and they've got their iPad phones and they're saying, "Look at this, and I can do this, and I can do that," and I try to tell them to remove those words from their vernacular. They're very technical, they're very capable, and it goes to the confidence thing, because I want to change their mindset about how they think about how they are as technologists. So that's something that's very important to me. So what we're going to do is we're going to talk a little bit about what the challenges we face as an industry. And I think everyone in this room is probably very aware of it, because that's one of the reasons why you're here, is that, you know, with women in technology fields, you know, that the trends are not the way we want them to be, especially in the last 10 years. And in the lavender box, you'll see, you know, in 1985, which is kind of our time frame, you know, 37% of the undergraduates in computer science were women. That's now dropped to 14% in 2010, and probably in 2012 or 13, it's more like 7 or 8%. It's really dropped off. And that's the trend we want to change. And the main reason we want to change it is because technology jobs are out there, and technology is hiring. And there's many, many jobs, and there's not enough candidates. So we want there to be more women. We want there to be more men. We want there to be more people in technology so that we can fill these jobs, and then we don't have students coming out of college that don't have jobs while we have jobs that we can't fill. So that's a thing that we just want to correct. So these statistics sort of point out the challenge that we face. You know, and there's been a number of studies and things that talk about the reasons behind that, and I think we know, you know, that it's one of these things where early on in girls' lives, they get an opportunity to be exposed to technology or STEM kind of things, but those opportunities are less and less. And as they move through middle school and high school and college, they get more and more self-selected out. And so by the time they're in college, they're not really even interested in technology. So what we wanted to talk about is some of the things that you know, that we like to do. So we believe that women and men are great in high tech. And one of the things that we want to take the message out there, and it's very important to get to young women in high school as well as in their freshman and sophomore years of college, is that there's this kind of presumption, if they don't know anything about what we do, they think we're all Java programmers, right? And so when you talk to somebody who's in 10th or 11th grade and you say, "Well, what do you think, you know, what do you think being in high tech is?" They go, "Well, don't you program all the time?" And I think the last time you programmed was what?
A really long time.
Yeah, I was going to say, like,
because I look younger than I am.
Yeah. So pretty much like never, right? So we don't program, but yet that's the presumption that these young people have. And so we've got to get the word out that the careers in high tech are a whole variety of careers. You can be a researcher, you can work in higher education, you can work in state government, you can work for a manufacturer, you can be in marketing, you can be in sales, you can be in support. There's all these jobs. It's not just about that very narrow, you know, programming piece. And so we're trying to get the word out. And so one of the things I do talk about with the various students is the fact that women are very strong in high tech because of their empathy skills. They really have a natural instinct to want to take care of the problem, take care of their students, take care of their customer, whatever their role might be. And so they really have a nice natural inclination in high tech, and we're trying to encourage them to pursue that. So, go ahead. So one thing I want to talk about that we do as a manufacturer, and then we're going to share with each of the panelists is going to share what they do and some of the strategies and best practices they've done to encourage women in the technology fields, is one of the things we've done as a manufacturer, and this is something really fun that we enjoy, is we work with different universities and we hold events on campus, and we basically, if it's a school that is mostly pulling in from the local high schools, we invite the high schools and we invite the high school girls, which is what we did here in LSU, and we bring a panel of women like we have here today, of various backgrounds. We usually have a faculty member, we usually have somebody from state government, we usually have somebody from a small company, a big company, but all women and all in technology, to be role models so that when these girls walk into this room and they see all women in the high-tech field, that they can start to see that, hey, I could do that. And so in the case of LSU, we brought in 170 high school girls from around the 12 surrounding high schools, and we spent all day with them talking about careers in technology. And then we also do it at other schools where if you don't pull from the local high schools, we have the freshmen, sophomore, juniors, and seniors come in, and again, we talk about the careers. So that's one of the things that we've done, and we've really enjoyed that. So I'm curious, I want to get some thoughts from the audience. Has any of you have a Women in Technology outreach program that you've done that you'd like to share with the team? And if you have, go up to one of the microphones. Anybody? Okay, we'll have other chances to get your input. So with that, I think we go to Sharon.
Fabio. So at George Mason University, we held one of these Women in Technology events, and we actually did it in conjunction with our College of Humanities and...
Okay.
There you go. That's better.
You might have to...
Okay, how about this? Is that working?
Yes.
Okay, I'll try to keep my voice right here. Mm-hmm. So at George Mason University, we worked with our College of Humanities and Social Sciences to do a Women in Technology event. In large part because, and this is because our dean and our associate dean of that college both have children who are art history majors who could not get jobs. So they were looking at ways, how could we encourage the students at our institution to look at technology as a potential field? So encourage them to perhaps get an Adobe certification if they were in the art history arena, or even pick up a Microsoft certification that might make them more valuable as a hire somewhere in the technology field. And as Regina has talked about, it doesn't have to be the hardcore programming, and I did the math. It's been 30 years since I programmed. I didn't want to think about that. So, but there's so many options that are open to people in so many disciplines in the technology arena, so we're trying to encourage that. And we had a great event hosted by NetApp at George Mason, as she indicated. If you want to see this actually in the resources tab of this session, the entire video of our event is here. And one of the things I found quite interesting about the panelists that we chose is that we had a whole range of women leaders, from those who are younger to those who are older, and all sorts of areas from government, from Fairfax County Public Schools. I was there, and it was just a great opportunity to expose the students at our university to the kinds of stories that these women tell, as well as the opportunity to ask questions and interact with them. So please, if you're interested, go to that particular area on the EDUCOS site, and you can see the whole event. Another thing that we're doing is not just university-wide functions, but we are, in our Bolgeno School of Engineering, trying to reach students when they're very, very young. So we've been working with Microsoft and the National Science Foundation to try to encourage students when they're in high school or even when they're in middle school to become interested in a technology career. So we've been having some success with that. And if there are any other vendors in the audience, we would love to host those kinds of events and really get some of our young girls thinking about technology careers.
Absolutely.
So we have another question.
you may not be doing events on your institution, but how might you make this a priority at your institution? What is it that you think you might be able to do? Mm-hmm. If I see people I know, I might call on them.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a classroom.
Okay.
Well, we can have maybe a more general question session at the end.
They're having a hard time hearing.
Okay. We're getting a lot of feedback up here, too.
Okay.
So the question is there a way that you can make women in technology a priority at your institution? What thoughts might you have about that?
Oh, there we go. You want to come over to the speaker real quick?
Yeah, come over to the microphone, please.
As I'm listening, I'm so used to not being able to hear. As I'm listening to you, I'm thinking I would love to do the kind of panel that you mentioned. Now, the universities you represent are all fairly large. So is it hard to get somebody like you, Regina, at maybe smaller school? We're a NetApp customer, so, you know.
Absolutely. No, we do them all shapes and sizes. We've done 20, we've done 40, we've done 170. It just depends on what you want to do, and we make them very custom to the school and to the personality and culture of the school.
How long would you say, those of you who have done this at your institutions, how long did it take you to pull it together?
Well, it really wasn't that long of an effort for us, and Regina's team actually helped that out since we were doing that the first time, and we got some assistance from our career center in hosting this kind of event, which I think, you know, absolutely draw on that kind of service at your institution to do it, or even your student life or university life group. But it was a fairly easy event to do, and getting the marketing out was great. We got a good group of students coming to the event, and it was about a half a day that I think that we spent on it.
So not only do we have the panelists talk, but we have a networking event afterwards. So we encourage all the girls to get at least 3 signatures from the panelists that they've networked, because we're encouraging networking. So that's what makes the event, you know, potentially a little bit longer. The other thing that we've started doing is ask the university to reach out to a few marketing students and have them help us market the event so that they can put that on their resume. And, you know, so we really make it a kind of a cultural event for everybody, and it really does work out well.
And Mason, not only did we have the panelists at the networking event, but we had women leaders throughout our institution in technology come and network with the students, even if those people were not on the panel.
I'd like to add, too, that there are some resources that you can get at through the EDUCAUSE resources site that Sharon mentioned, from NCWIT, that has some kits of things you can do for outreach and for that audience and age group.
Yeah, at IU2, it took us about 6 months to plan it. Now, that sounds like a long time. It was really because of the calendaring and getting the right people on the calendar and the right time of the year. So it wasn't a tremendous effort. We had to take about 6 months to get it so that it was populated and prepared.
So with that, Sue?
Yeah, so about 2.5 years ago, Regina called me just out of the blue saying, hey, what would you think about doing a Women in Technology event? I was like, well, that sounds like fun. Like, what are we going to do? So in October, you can go ahead and change it. October of 2010, we had almost a full day event. We started at 9:30 in the morning and went till about the end of the day. I want to show you, these are some materials that we used. On the right is a postcard that we sent out advertising to students and to the high schools and the high school students. We have flyers that we put up all around town. And then we gave away, and you know, especially for girls of the teenage type, giveaways are really good and really necessary. So we gave them several handouts and several things, but the biggest, most popular thing were these orange flip-flops. And so we gave them orange flip-flops in a pink bag, and they were very, very happy with that. So that was something that really helped to attract the girls and get them involved right away with something that they thought was pretty cool. So part of what I want to relay about our event was really, what are some of the best practices that we have and that we think that you need to include if you're wanting to plan one of these events. And one is to think about the age of your audience. We did this one with Regina that was really targeted more toward the younger college age or older high school people. But, you know, we also had some adults that came in that were interested in changing their degree. So you have to kind of know your audience. So we did things, you know, I use colors or cream and crimson, right? They're red and white. So we didn't do everything in red and white. We did a lot in pink and orange. And that's not usually what the 50-year-old woman would pick out to do, you know, a business kind of event. But that's what attracted a lot of these young women. And we did some modeling around what would get their attention and their eye. We created a project plan and budget just like you do with every other event or every other kind of project. To make sure the timelines were met, and then we did a lot of marketing around. I personally called all of the local high school guidance counselors and emailed them and asked them to send, you know, their students that would really benefit from such an event. And we did a lot with clubs at IU to try to get the word out and make sure that people knew about it. We did ask, we marketed really early and we focused a lot on how to reach those audiences and just did everything we could in order to get that word out, even radio and TV ads. You want to turn that, Sharon, please? So it's also important to make sure you choose the date based on campus calendar. So you don't want to do it during finals or a major football game or something like that. You need to really make sure you're choosing the date. You need to line up a powerful role model, I think, to really attract. One of our attractions in our event was that we had just had one of our female faculty members win a Nobel Prize in economics. And what took 6 months was her calendar, but she agreed to be the keynote speaker. So she can rest in peace now. It's too bad she passed away this summer, but we were really happy that she was able to touch as many people as she could during that time. And then it's really important also to have different ages. Sharon mentioned you had different people, but we had, we had a VP from Microsoft, we had a VP from NetApp and Regina, we had an owner of Matrix, which is a company in Indianapolis, it's female, and we had several IT leaders at IU, but we also had students and we had the younger women, so that, you know, it kind of depends on the age of your audience. We did a high school event like this too, on our own, called it Tech Girls Rock, and what we noticed there is they didn't want to hear from me. I mean, you know, I could be the role model, but I was their mother. You know, they didn't want to hear from me. What they wanted to hear from were the informatics students that actually got down on the floor with them and they did projects and they played IT and fashion. You know, so I don't know anything about IT and fashion. So it was really good, though, to have people that related to them. You need to have, of course, food and fun and some time for them to practice. So have some events or have some exercises for them, not to just sit there and listen, but also to really practice what they're getting to do. Registration is a good thing, but if somebody walks in, let them come.
Yeah, I got that in mind.
So there's a few other things that are happening now at IU. We actually are just announcing next week, but there will be a Center of Excellence for women in the STEM, focusing on the STEM science, technology, engineering, and math education. So that's something that we're really happy that's starting to go on. We've had a UITS, which is University Information Technology Services, sponsored women in technology. And what's really nice about that is it's the younger mid-level generation that's really pushing that. So we're glad to see that there's getting buy-in at that level. Our Dean of Informatics, Bobby Schnabel, has been honored by the White House for his work in getting women in technology. And then there's various other programs. So what we're trying to do now is unify those programs as much as we can in order to leverage what we've done. So here's another question for you. IT is hot right now, cloud, mobile, big data, security, and iEverything. How can we convey the breadth of opportunities to our women students? Ideas? Thoughts?
Oh, here we go. Go to the microphone, please.
Yeah. Go to. I saw somebody over here. Go ahead and go to the microphone.
Right behind you. He's going over.
My name is Lisa Call. I'm from Ryerson University. The much maligned Ryerson University is here in Oakland, Kingdom. But I'm also with an organization from Canada called Community Promotion of Wildlife. So, and we've been working on these issues for a few years. So, do you mind if I take a couple of minutes and explain what we're doing?
Sure.
That's okay.
He says one.
One minute.
I'm sorry.
Anyway, we think that this is a systemic problem in the culture. It's not something we can address through, one sort of one observation. And we built a whole campaign around the idea of disseminating an entirely new narrative.
Of professionals in law and medicine were female, yet over half of the graduating classes in law and medicine were female. So you can see what's going to happen in those fields. And it wasn't because somebody did a campaign to convince women that they should go into these fields. It was because they decided they wanted to do it. And I don't think it was because they thought it was too hard. Those are hard fields. And they're also very technical, each in their own way. It's because people have a perception of the number one perception about this, about IT, is that people don't really know what it is to have a career in this field. And then the number two perception is that it is super technical, geeky, and limited. You're gonna spend your whole life sitting in front of a computer, and then your job's gonna get offshore to India. So you know, there's a whole new story that we need to tell, and it applies to a different, to a kind of right-brain kind of boy, as well as to many more women who value right brain much more than left brain in many respects. Yeah. So it's a whole campaign, and you can't really do it piecemeal. Eventually you need to change the curriculum, and you've got these paid agents going into high school classes called teachers, paid by the state, spreading these myths. So eventually we have to change what people are actually told by their teachers.
So I think that you've made some great points, but we are going to have to cut you off because we have such limited time. But I think we all wholeheartedly agree with the points you've made. And in fact, you've given me a great jumping off point. So I'm wearing two hats today. I'm both a computer science professor at Oregon State, and I'm on the leadership team at the National Center for Women and Technology. And so I'm going to try to talk about both at the same time, I think. NCWIT is the abbreviation for that organization. And in fact, many of the universities who are here at this conference have members of NCWIT. It's very widespread. So NCWIT was formed as a way to try to bring everyone together, because just as the gentleman said, it's a big problem, and there isn't like one factor that can be addressed and then suddenly the world changes. And so you need everyone working together. And that's what NCWIT tries to do. And so one of the things that NCWIT does is it produces evidence-based, well-researched resources. And you all have some of these sitting around on your tables. So when Ranjina talked about the numbers, they actually came from NCWIT data, which in turn mined those from a number of different studies. And you have this. And the one that you're looking at on this slide is another example of the kinds of resources they have. This one's called REU in a Box. And you can see there's a picture of me there on that, and two of my students. That's because I helped write this particular one. So this is about research experiences for undergrads. And that's been one of my passions as a computer science professor. So I just let students be the best they can be. And for many years now, one of the ways I've tried to do that is, in addition to my grad students, I always have a few top undergrads working with me on my research projects. And so this has turned out to be a very effective practice at retaining and recruiting members of underrepresented groups like women to go on. Wait, one second. So an in a box is a kit. And so those of you who are faculty who are saying, gee, research with undergraduates, you know, is that like more trouble than it's worth? Can you really get anything out of an undergraduate? What would you do with them? What kind of support would they need? You know, how do you even recruit the good ones? What do you do afterwards? What do they do with it? If you're wondering all those things, it's in the box. There are lists of project ideas, there are forms, there are questionnaires, there are steps, and lists of costs and benefits to you and to the student. So that is the sort of resource that's there. Okay, you can switch. Now, I mentioned that these resources are evidence-based, so you may be wondering, you know, well, does research experiences for undergrads, does that really work? Well, there's lots of evidence out there, many studies that say that it does, but I want to tell you about four people that I happen to know of that you're looking at here. The first one's J.J. Cadiz, Hispanic, and he was one of my undergrad research students back in the 90s. I had to twist his arm. He didn't see himself as someone who could do research. He was just aiming for one of those sort of standard tester developer jobs. And he started looking at himself in a whole new way. He went on and got a graduate degree at Carnegie Mellon, went to work for Microsoft Research and Microsoft back and forth over the years. He's still there. And a few years back, he was named by Technology Review as one of the top 100 young innovators in the world. So they made a huge difference to them. The next two, Jen Davidson and Kyle Rector, both of them thought that they didn't particularly like research in computer science. They engaged in research experiences, and now both of them are PhD students at various institutions. And in fact, Kyle is posing with one of many national awards that she won. That particular one is a Google scholarship. The quote, "My research experience is the reason I'm here today," that was said by Hakeem Witherspoon, who's the last one you're looking at. Hakeem had a research experience in technology as a high school student, and that's what caused him to become a computer science major, and now he's a professor of computer science at Cornell. So they really work. There are a bunch more of these kits that are available from NCWIT, and I've put the URLs of all of these on the resource site, as well as the general one, so you can get them. These sort that we're looking at now have to do with mentoring and supervising, and there's a thing on some of your tables that just sort of gives you a few more details about what's in one of these boxes, but they're all kits. I've actually used the mentoring in a box for women faculty, and that one's awesome. It has lists of expectations that the mentor might have and that the mentee might have, and the responsibilities that both might want to agree on, so that everybody is sharing the same expectations about what the relationship should be like and what everybody should contribute and do and expect to get out of it. So these are great, but if you don't believe they work, that last one is how to evaluate a mentoring program in a box. So there are kits for gathering your own data on your own research or your own mentoring programs to see if they actually work. One more slide from me. These in-a-box kits aren't the only kind of resources that they have. These top 10 ways are just sort of 10 little bullet points for somebody who doesn't have time to actually open a box. And the URLs for those are there too. One of them is how to be a male advocate for technical women. So if you're a male wondering how you can help, download that box, or that top 10 ways. It's all free, of course. One of them is for you, how to increase your own visibility. One of them is for your manager, how to help increase technical women's visibility. So all that stuff's there. It's all free. I encourage you to download it and make use of it. So actually, this whole part of my talk was aimed at answering this question. What resources or support are available. So I'd just like to add an other, because that's not the only set of resources that are out there that are concrete things you can get your hands on for best practices. So if some of you know of more things that maybe you've used at your institution or you know of from various organizations, if you can share those,
Or if you have any questions for any of us or anything further you want to contribute, just now's the time.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, come on up to the mic. Just and feel free to just line up there. You don't have to wait to be called on.
Hello, I'm Kathleen Long. I'm the Director of Web Services for the University of South Florida. Okay. And one of the ways that we connect with the community, I know that we have, there's a lot of competing organizations with women, and there shouldn't be. I belong to an organization called Women in Technology International, and I'm on the board for our Tampa Bay chapter. And what we've done is collaborated with a bunch of other technology associations around the community. And so we recently reached out to underprivileged students and taught them how to do a lot of things in technology, how to do planning for mobile apps. And, you know, I left thinking, if I can teach fourth graders how to design a mobile app, how come I can't go back and make my web developers do the same thing? So anyway, but it's a really great way to, you know, get the word out by at least using your institution as the way, as the kind of the entryway into these organizations.
Great, thank you. More comments, questions about anything?
And I think one point that I wanted to address with what the gentleman said, you know, one of the things that we're trying to do is really showcase women role models. So when you talk about, you know, I definitely believe it's cultural. I believe that for a long time, the last decade or two, it's been all about trying to be Britney Spears instead of trying to be smart and trying to be accomplished. And so I do think that, you know, we have to show young girls role models, and they need to see us in different walks of life. Like Sharon said, we had young girls. You know, one of those panelists is a sales rep for VMware, and in her early career, she sold, you know, beer to bars, you know, before she went into technology. So the girl, she was very relatable. You know, the girls were like, oh, I could be her. You know, I can relate, you know. And so we try to be relatable, and we try to have different people with different walks of life, but we really want to showcase women, because if you walk into a room and it's all men, the girls are going to tune out and say, this isn't for me. I can't do this. They're just going to immediately decide that. So that's one of the things we're trying to do, is just continue to show role models. And that's an important thing that we have to do.
Yes.
I just wanted to make a comment that I came, I think it would be great if we could reach out to traditionally female degree programs that have complementary skill sets. I came from an information science and library world, where we would go to conferences and it would be 95% women. Oh. But, you know, the skills you learn in library and information science are very related to information technology, instructional technology. And I think that if we just kind of look outside the box, no matter what our degree is, you can find a place in information technology. And we, as people in technology, can reach out in that way.
Yeah,
exactly.
Absolutely. Very good point.
I agree with you on showcasing women tech role models, absolutely, and we've been doing that very, very, you know, obviously disproportionately to their participation in the labor force, because we also show male role models.
Okay.
But we put them into classrooms, put them on the website, and so on. And we're getting results. We have metrics that show that, you know, we're increasing people's interest in the field.
And you talked about relatable that people do, but there's an element of this, and I think a lot of us wrote this on the things that we enjoy about our jobs, is that they're fulfilling in some way. And, you know, we had a CIO, the CIO of the Fairfax County Public Schools, but before that she was also CIO for the Red Cross. So she had a lot that she could talk about in terms of really meaningful differences that she's made. Not that we don't feel like we're making meaningful differences in higher education, but we're not necessarily saving lives. So, you know, I think that there's a wonderful way to put together a portfolio of women leaders, no matter what age or how relatable, but you can relate to these students in many different ways.
And the philanthropy is a big, one of the things I find with a lot of the young women I talk to, you know, they do want to give back. They do want to be philanthropic. And so what, you know, I try to encourage is that your career can be your platform for being philanthropic. You know, you can go and volunteer. You might help one person, but if you, you know, if you become in information technology and your job can affect many, many, many more people, and that is appealing to the young girls. They really want to feel like they can make a difference. And mm-hmm. so putting a spin on it where they feel that about the career field really does make a difference, I think.
So just a few more
off-the-cuff best practices, things you can do if you're a faculty member. Do we have faculty members in here? One, two? Three? Okay, we have three faculty members. Maybe some of these things will also resonate in places where you are. But for example, one of the problems with underconfidence with women in technology is that they think everybody else is better than they are, even if that's not true. So when I give an exam and I pass out the tests, I always write all the scores on the board. I don't write who got them, just a list of all the scores. And that helps everybody calibrate where they actually did. And so if the top score was an 80 and it happens that a female got that, if she hadn't seen the list of the scores, she might have thought, oh, you know, I knew I wasn't that good at it. Now they think, whoa, I got the top score. So that's one thing I do, just get the data out there so people can calibrate how they're doing. Another thing I do is on my midterms, the ones who do the best, I write one sentence on there that says, have you ever thought about grad school as one possible option? And a lot of times undergraduates haven't because it's just not something that's really on their radar screens. And that one sentence can completely change their whole attitudes about themselves. They get excited that they got picked out, and they start realizing that there are more options than what they realized. And some of them come around and ask me more, and some of them choose to go on. And I'm not necessarily trying to recruit to our school. I'm just trying to make them understand there are a lot of options.
And one of the things, too, that we like to do in the sessions that we have with the students is it's not about trying to take this group of women who show up for the session and say, you need to now be a computer science major or you need to now be an information systems major. But what we try to say to them is take whatever it is that you're passionate about and make it IT ready, if you will. So if you're passionate about art history, then maybe take a art on the web class so that you could take that art and make it, you know, IT ready for a job that might be in a high-tech marketing company doing their marketing slicks or things like that. So we still want them to follow their passion. We just want them to be their curriculum, to take some courses that make them more, if you will, well-rounded, that allows them to take a high-tech job. So for example, if somebody's a marketing major, but they're not comfortable with technology, and my company posts a marketing job, they might not apply for it because they'll be like, well, I'm not technical, so I couldn't possibly work for marketing at a company like that. But if they've taken a class or two, they can still be a marketing major, but they're going to feel very comfortable. They're going to say, yep, I can do that. And that's what we're trying to get them to think about is how can I make my curriculum and my career IT ready.
In terms of making this more systemic within the institution, we have been working with the Dean of College of Humanities and Social Sciences to help these more humanities-type careers, these humanity-types degrees, to be translated into something that becomes hireable in a professional job. So our college is actually working on what are the courses that these students need to take in order to translate that into some kind of profession that they can do. So there actually is an active set of courses that are defined for students to get to that place.
At IU too, we hire a lot of students to do hourly jobs or different part-time jobs. And many of our better support people actually come from the School of Music. Oh, right. We have a very well-known School of Music, and we find that students that are in that area, as well as the library information science and School of Business, other areas can actually come there and work and get other skills that then can produce different kind of job opportunities for them in the long run.
And that's a really important point. All of your schools have, you know, help desks and things like that. If you can encourage the students to work in those, when you think of a manufacturer, like us, for example, you know, a third of our workforce is in that whole support help desk 24 hours a day, serving the whole world. It's a great career field, and it's a way for them to get an early chance to try it out and see how they feel. Okay, well, with that, any other comments, ladies? Okay.
Thanks.
So we're gonna finish up our session. So first of all, we want to thank everybody for coming. We appreciate your time and attendance. And we encourage you strongly to think out, reach out to a girl, encourage her, tell her she's smart, tell her how she's using technology to solve problems, you know, give her some early wins, and I think you'll find that more and more of them will start to come back into technology, which is where we want them so we can hire them, okay? So thank you very much, and we are going to have a drawing, but I didn't want to, the people online can't participate, sorry. So for everybody,